Okay. When were you born?
Born 9th month, 26th day of 24.
And where?
I was born in Mount Heer County, right across the river on the Oregon side, across the river from Weezer, Idaho.
And your name at birth?
Fred Eugene Winslow.
And when did you move to Union County?
About spring of 1929.
So you were approximately 5 years old.
Yeah, I was four going on five.
What prompted your family to move to LeGrand?
My dad worked for C.H. McClure, running the monument works. And he run it until McClure's moved here.
And where did you live in those early days in LeGrand?
Well, the first place we lived was down on Madison Street. Right, about a block or so below where the Van Patten Lumber Company was.
And where did you start school?
Started school at Riveria. At that time, we had moved, and I was living over on W, or I was living on Y, I can't remember which, but I lived on Y right across from Sinden's Grocery.
And you went through your grade school years at Riveria?
No. Then we moved on down to Spruce and Y. And then the third grade, I started going to school at Greenwood and finished up at Greenwood until I went to junior high.
Was there anything particular you remember about going to those grade schools?
I think probably the one that sticks in my mind more than anything was B. Young, who's my teacher. I think one of the reasons I remember B more than anything is I had a leaky valve in my heart and I passed out in school one day. Came recess time and everybody else got up and marched out and I sat there and when she touched me I slid in the floor and then as soon as I hit the floor, well, I come to and she picked me up and took me home, which was a couple of blocks away, and told my mother to keep me out of school, and while she was talking to my mother, I turned around and went back to school. But B was a good teacher.
Uh-huh. Well, when you started to up to junior high, you started at the ninth grade or eighth grade up at
eighth grade, and we started in most of our classes was over in the old Central School building. And I don't remember too much about junior high or high school. I wasn't a good student. I didn't go to school any oftener than I had to. One other teacher that really got my attention was, her name was McKinney. And that was down to Greenwood. And for what reason, I don't know whether I'd done something or what, or whether I wasn't doing something. But anyhow, I'd always had had a badly crossed eye, and the doctor just got it straightened up, and she slammed me on the head with a book and crossed my eye again. That and a few other things, and my father dying in 1935 when I was 11 years old. Between those two things and a few more things, I never cared for school very much, so I didn't go any oftener than I had to, and actually never finished high school, even though I was a junior twice and done half of senior year.
There were many things going on when you would have graduated from high school.
The war had started.
And the fact that your father died probably made quite a difference.
Yes.
Should I tell the first time that I remember you when we were in high school?
Well, if you'd like to tell that, John, you tell it to everybody else. You might as well tell it for this.
We were sitting in study hall, and you said, "I don't want to be here." You went to the end of the study hall, and jumped head first out the window, and what was the teacher's name? Come Ms. running
Kate Hall,
there.
Mrs. Hall.
She says, "You can't do that," but you were gone. And that's the first time I remember you in high school. Of course, I was kind of impressed because I was in junior high myself. I'd never seen anybody do that before.
Well, I think you should remember me before that, John, because you used to come to Berger's Grocery.
That's true.
And I lived right across the street, and there was what was called the Berger Gang hung around there, a whole bunch of kids all about my age. And Mrs. Berger used to let us work in the store. Dust shelves and stock shelves and things, and get a bottle of pop or a candy bar for doing it. And I probably learned more mathematics from Mrs. Berger than I did any place else, because she had you, she could take a, one of those little grocery slips that they wrote up the orders on and price things out and then add them up. And you got so you could add it faster than she could do it with an adding machine if she, after the way she taught you how to do it, and you could do it.
Well, there was a lot of little grocery stores in every neighborhood in town, weren't there?
There was lots of them. There was about four right in that neighborhood, when you, four or five, about five of them, when you take Andrews, Burgers, Divine's, Sinden's, Greenwood Grocery.
Yeah.
There was little grocery stores there all over the neighborhood, and they all seemed to make a living at that time.
And those were really tough times.
It was tough times.
Yeah, it, the Depression.
And I can remember before Dad died that Eplings owned about three or four stores here, and Safeway had about four stores in town at that time. And Eplings and Safeway would get in price wars over sugar. And of course they wouldn't sell it to Mr. Berger, so he would give Dad some money and send him out to buy up 100-pound sacks of sugar and bring them back to the store, because you could buy cheaper off of them than you could out of the wholesale house, and Mr. Berger had the money to do it, so he would stock up any time they had a price war. Well, he'd stock up on things, put it in the basement of his store, and make a good profit on it when the time came that he could get it out.
Those times when Safeway had the number of stores, can you tell us where they were at the time?
Well, one of them was in the old Foley Hotel building. And another one was down, I think it was right there close to or in the same building that the China Mary's. It was under China Mary's. That was before we got a Western Auto store in there.
Right.
But there was one there, and then there's one where the Globe Furniture is, and then there's one out on the corner of Fern Madison. Or Monroe.
That Harrison building.
I think it was across the street, and Harrison was a...
Oh.
And then Harrison, what I understand, Harrison's is related to Beverly. Somehow.
Beverly Strong Kirkwood.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Harrison's and Safeway went into partnership,
oh,
and it all became Safeway. And then when they built the new store on the corner of Adams and 4th, which was right about where the old Le Grand Hotel was.
The old Le Grand Hotel sat right there in the corner, and they built the new store.
They built the new store right out on the corner there. There was a little parking lot beside it.
Yeah. When they had the store down where Gold Furniture store is now, that was actually the first attempt at a modern supermarket.
I think it was.
Whitey O'Neill was the manager?
Could have been. I don't know that I was ever even in that store.
And, do you remember him tearing down the old Grand Hotel?
I can remember a little bit of it. The one thing I can remember about the Le Grand Hotel, it was closed. And I think the windows was out of it. And down in the lobby, there was some toilets and bathtubs and stuff strung around in the lobby of it, and that's about all I can remember of it. I can remember, I think it was open when we first moved here, but I didn't get downtown too much until later years, few years later, and by that time I was out walking around downtown, then I can remember the stuff being there in the lobby, and there's a toilet sitting right out in the middle of the lobby floor.
Well, they tore it down in 1940. In August was when they tore it down. And it's ironic that as we speak now, they're tearing down the what we used to call the new Safeway store. Well, when you first started, what was one of the first jobs that you did while you were growing up?
Well, probably one of the first job I had was before I was just about the time of the beginning of the war, and they was building the ordnance depot over at Umatilla. In the summertime, a fellow Pendleton hired me just to pump gas. And he was a mechanic. He didn't want to do any tire work. He didn't want to do any lube jobs or anything. He done all mechanical work, and he didn't like to be disturbed. And he hired me in the summertime when I was over visiting my aunt, well, that lived in Pendleton. Well, he hired me. I don't know how I got the job, through whether it was through a cousin or what, but I was only about 14, 15 years old. And he hired me because they started that ordnance depot quite a little while before the war came along. And I remember there was one guy who used to come in there and fill up with gas to drive to over to Hermiston to work there. And his car burned oil real bad, so he'd always take a pour it full of used motor oil and then turn around and want another gallon or so to take with him and get the used motor oil from the station there and take it with him and leave a smoke screen as he left.
Then you'd come back to LeGrand, go to school?
And I'd come back to LeGrand, go to school. And the first full-time job I had here was with the Old Modern Laundry. And, George McIntyre owned that.
And what did you do with the Modern Laundry?
I was delivering. Picking up and delivering laundry.
I thought there was a time that you drove taxi.
I drove taxi. That was after the war was over. Oh. That was in 40, starting about 46, 47.
But you worked for Modern Laundry there for...
I worked for the Modern Laundry, and then I worked for another fellow called the name of Bill Rivers, selling eggs and produce.
And that's the man that had what they called the Rivers Hotel?
And, yes.
Mm-hmm. And later, Ken Flannery...
Yeah, it was his son-in-law, and he eventually took over the egg business. But yeah. I was out of it before that.
When you went to work and you bought your first car, what kind of a car did you buy?
I bought the 34 Chevrolet two-door. And that was... I can't remember the year.
Remember about how much you had to pay for it?
No, I don't have any idea.
You didn't make much money in those days.
No.
About what did you earn?
I think that when I went to work for Modern Laundry, I was getting something like $17.50 a week. When I went to work for Bill Rivers, I was getting $35 a week.
I went up.
I went up, but I put in a lot more hours too, and covered a lot more territory.
Well, you learned the town pretty well in those days making deliveries.
Yeah.
Right
now, I don't know whether I would like to try delivering or not. They put in some new streets around here. We got new streets that I never heard of because we've spread out a little farther.
Well, they expanded the city limits a lot more than it was.
Yeah.
During that time, the population was about 8,000. Is that correct?
I imagine around 8,000 to 9,000, and I think we probably had maybe not quite as many, but almost as many kids in school as there is now.
And I assume that you stayed out of the service because of this heart problem?
No, it wasn't a heart problem. I was drafted, went to Spokane, was up being sworn in, and they called me back and told me that I had inactive TB.
Cool.
I told them I did not, but it done no good. So when I got back home, I went to Dr. Gilstrap and had some, the ones that they took up there was little postage stamp size x-rays. And I knew that there couldn't be that much trouble with my lungs, so, or that I'd never had TB. So I went to Gilstrap and had some big x-rays taken and had them sent down to the Dallas to the TB hospital. They came back that I did not have any inactive TB. The only thing I had was scar tissue in my lungs from having double pneumonia twice when I was a baby.
Oh.
And of course, starting smoking at 11 years old didn't help the situation any. It left some of that stuff in my lungs that made the scar tissue more prominent. Then when the Korean War came along, I took my reports from the TB hospital to the draft board, and they still never reclassified me, even after I took them in, even though the war was still going on. And I took them in, and they still didn't reclassify me. And when the Korean bid came along in the 50s, I was drafted again and sent to Boise that time for a physical. Passed the physical, but I was too old for them. They didn't want me. They wanted kids.
Well, it really didn't break your heart, did it?
No. I was really heartbroken when all of my buddies went, and I didn't get to go.
I understand.
But after seeing what some of them went through and the condition some of them came home, I felt that I was pretty lucky in some ways.
What's the biggest change that you've seen in LeGrand during that time from when you moved here to...
Well, I think probably the biggest change is going on right now when you go out on the Island City Strip and fight that traffic out there. And a lot of changes down through town. We've had 4 lanes of traffic down through town. Now we have 2 lanes of traffic. We had 2 lanes of traffic, then it went 4 lanes of traffic, then it's gone back to 2 lanes of traffic again. And I think it was a crying shame when they moved Safeway all the way down to the other end of town and left nothing up in this end of town. It
kind of changed the center of town.
Yes, it did.
A longer way for a lot of people to go to buy some groceries today.
Yeah, I could walk from home up to the old Safeway, but I don't think I could make it up to the new one and bring home a sack of groceries anymore.
Well, then, what time did you start work for the New Way Cleaners?
I started to work for those in September of 1950.
And that's, you were delivering again?
Yes. I'd left the, in the meantime, I drove cab, and then I worked for Fountain Wholesale for a few months, almost a year. And then I went back to driving cab. And then I got an opportunity to go to work for New Way. And at that time, Mabel Walters owned it.
Uh-huh. And while you were driving cab, what was the worst thing? A lot of things happened to cab drivers. Did that concern you?
No, it really didn't. I can tell you one story that... I went down and picked up a couple of colored fellows one afternoon. Down, they had a little colored restaurant down on Madison Street. No, on Monroe. A little restaurant down there, and I went down there and picked up a couple of fellows. And George Trice came out. George is a brother to Lucky, and he was quite a fellow. He worked for, Eldridge Packing Company. He'd done their killing for them. So. And I hauled George quite a bit in the cab, so George come out, and he looked down the cab, and he come around, climbed in the cab. These two fellows got in the back seat, and he climbed in the cab. He says, they wanted to go down and see some gal down here, live in the shack down by Eldridge Packing Company. So we got down there and says, what do I owe you? And I told him, and they started arguing with me. And George says, you called the boy, you rode with the boy, now pay the boy. And so they kind of quit arguing, paid me, got out. George says, can I ride back town with you now? And I says, yeah, George, you can ride back town with me. Start back in town, George says, only reason to come is because it was you driving. He says, I don't like them other drivers up there. He says, and them, it was mean niggers. He says, they would have cut your throat for that amount of money. But he says, when I seen it was you, he says, I ran along with you because, he says, I like you, but I don't like them other drivers. I'd let them go ahead and take him. And I thought, well, it pays to treat George nice and have him as a friend.
Well, Lucky Trice, his brother, was kind of the unofficial mayor of the colored section, wasn't
he? Another thing, John, when I first moved here and lived down on Madison, we hadn't been there but a few days. And to my knowledge, there was only one colored fellow in town at that time. There could have been more, but I don't remember. This is the only one I remember. And he came walking down the street, and I don't remember it, but my mother says that he come walking down the street, and I took one look at him coming to the house screaming. And the first colored fellow that I'd ever seen. I'd never seen any over at Weezer when we lived there, and I didn't. That's the first one I'd ever seen. And he was August Stang's chauffeur. Oh. Big fella, dressed nice because he had his peg pants on with his leather leggings and stuff. And that's the only one I can remember. I don't even know if he was married or not, because I don't ever remember seeing a black woman. I just can remember seeing him, or being told I seen him. And then later years after we'd moved out of that neighborhood, well, then there was more colored people around, and I seen them and went to school with them and everything.
Well, there were the Trices and
Torrances.
Torrances. And,
Bill Terry, which was a nephew, I think, of Lucky Trice. Bob Trice, yeah. He's nephew, I think, of Lucky Trice.
Well, Lucky's mother was Bob Terry's grandmother.
Oh.
But they were nice people.
They were.
Yeah, very nice people.
I got along with all of them. There was one or two of the families here that you wouldn't want for next door neighbors, but there's a lot of them that I'd just soon had for next door neighbors I would some of the white people around town.
I can appreciate that. Well, then, working for New Way, when did you get married, Gene?
Which time, John?
Well, you have a son, and
well, that was my second marriage.
And you have a daughter?
I've got a son and a daughter.
Uh-huh.
But okay. My first wife, we were married about 1952, and she had a girl. She was about 4 years older than me, and so she had a daughter that was a teenager when we got married. And we wasn't married but about, we was married about 3 years. And we couldn't get along, so that ended there. But since then, I have been in touch again with my stepdaughter there, and we're quite close. I just happened to go up to her mother's funeral. I wanted to see her. She came to her mother, would be there. I knew she'd be there at her mother's funeral. I went up to see her mainly, but and went to her mother's funeral, and we have been in touch ever since.
That's nice.
She's a nice girl. has a nice family, and she lives up in northern Idaho.
And your son works for an airline?
No, he used to work for an airline, but he lives in Lincoln, Nebraska now and works for Square D, making electrical breakers.
Oh.
It goes in your breaker boxes. And I got married again in 1960, early 61. And I married a lady that had three boys. And then we had two of our own, which was my son. And about 3 years later, my daughter. And about the time I got her kids raised completely and gone, well, she decided she wanted out, so she was gone. And my kids came to live with me. My son lived with me most of the time after we were divorced, so he came to live with me because he didn't want to live with his mother. And then my daughter was 16. She decided she didn't want to live with her mother any longer, so she came to live with me. So I was raising two kids in this little one-bedroom house. One on the hide a bed, and one in the room in the basement.
How many years then did you work for New Way Cleaners?
I was there for 22 years.
22 years.
It changed hands. Went from New Way to Craig's eventually. They didn't use the name Craig's for quite a little while, and then finally went to Craig's New Way, and then it just went to Craig's Cleaners.
And you decided to go to work for the mill.
Yeah, it was getting tougher and tougher to make a living. Well, it turned out to be kind of like the cab business was. That was one of the reasons I left the cab business, is the business had went down so you couldn't hardly make any money at it. By 1950, it was getting pretty sad in the cab business. And I went to work there in the dry cleaning business. I was there for 22 years, and it was gradually more wash and wear, and things were cutting in, and everything like that. And I had a family to support, and I finally got an interview and got on out the particle board for Boise Cascade.
Well, that made for a better retirement.
It made. I couldn't. I'd be in a lot worse shape. I don't have a big retirement, but I do have retirement, and I do have my insurance.
Well, that's great.
My supplementary insurance. The only problem with that is they keep raising it. In fact, I got a letter yesterday telling me it was going up another $15 a month.
I don't know where it's going to stop.
I don't think it's going to stop, John, because there's a few dollars left there, so they're going to get it before it's over and done with. But that was a good job, and it was a good move for me to go out there, and I did like the job.
What did you do at the particle board?
I worked as a laborer for quite some time, and that meant sweeping floors and banding up the units and clean up, just general labor, until the bid jobs come along, and I worked temporarily. Every once in a while they'd stick me up and train me a little bit as a grader and one thing or another. And so two jobs came up, a grader's job and a heister job. And I thought, well, I bid on both of them, and then I got both of them, and I had to make up my mind which one I was going to do. And I thought, well, I can probably get in less trouble driving a forklift than I can up there trying to grade that board. And if you sit there and go to sleep and the board goes by, you might get in trouble. So I thought for sure I could stay awake out on a forklift. So I drove forklift about 3-4 years I was there. I was there for 15 years until I retired.
They made a good quality product out there, didn't they?
They made a good quality product. They had a good business. In fact, in the wintertime, a lot of times they kept the sawmill running, even though it was running in the red, to make sure we had enough material to make board, because we was running in the black and we was carrying the whole works. We was carrying LeGrand and Elgin both a lot of times in the winter time, because sometimes their stuff wasn't moving as well as the particle board was, and so they would run those while we was making, because we could make a profit.
Well, that's good for something. We've sure seen a difference in the size of the logs and things they bring in, though, haven't we?
We have seen that, and it amazes me the amount of logs that's in that log yard out there this year. If you haven't drove by and noticed it, John, you want to take a look when you go by, because that log yard is the fullest I have ever seen it.
But they're just little tiny poles.
Yeah, you know, they aren't real big trees. There's some fairly decent ones, probably 18 inches to 2 feet or a little better, but they're not real big, but I have never seen that many logs in that log yard. Of course, we've had an open winter, and it's been easy for them to do it.
Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of change in working.
Don't like unions. A lot of them do. I don't approve some things that the union does. I think a lot of times they'll protect somebody that don't need protecting, that's been drinking on the job or doing something else or different things like that. And a lot of times the union will protect them or get their job back after they've been fired. And some of this I don't really go for, but I do believe that we need unions. If we didn't have the unions, I think a lot more of the management take advantage of their employees.
Well, they were pretty low paid until unions came along.
Yes, they was. When you go back to, and some of your union jobs even was, because I had a fellow ask me one day what I was making when I was working with the New Way Cleaners. He came up here from Boise, and they was union down there, and we was not union here, and he asked me what I was making, and I says, well, I'm making $35 a week, plus commissions. And I says, just depends on how hard I work, how much money I make, and how well things go. And I says, you have your slow times of the year and good times, but I says, I make a pretty fair living with my commission and my $35 a week. And he said, well, what does it average? And I give him the figure. I can't remember now just exactly what it was, but I was making $60, $70 a week that time, and that was more than he was making on a union job down to Boise doing the same thing I was doing. So unions didn't always pay the best, but they did come up. In fact, actually, I checked the particle board when it first opened, and I couldn't have made as much money there as I was making where I was working at the cleaning plant that time.
But you did have more fringes.
Yeah. But I went along about 4 or 5 years, and then I tried again to get on there and got on out there at the particle board. And the first year I was there, I about doubled what I had been making. So the wages had come up from the time they first opened. And there's a lot of nice fellows to work with. I enjoyed most of the people I worked with, and we had some good foremen, and we had some bad foremen. If you had a bad foreman, he could really give you a bad time. But I think that goes in any occupation, any place.
Well, LeGrand, there's been a lot of building around. Things have changed.
You go up and look over at the college and look over that campus up there from what it was when we were first here, and all we had was the administration building, and then they eventually built the first dormitory over there. Dorian Hall. Then added on to that, called the wing of it Hunt Hall.
Well, the war made a lot of difference because at that time all these servicemen came home and had the GI Bill and they went to school.
And you could tell the ones that first came and got away from home and came to school. And you can still do it today. They've never been away from home before, and they're pretty wild when they first get here, when they're freshmen first here. But most of the time, I have seen them up there because I had called on the dormitories up there all the time when I was working at the laundry and the dry cleaning plant. See the kids stand out there and throw snowballs and break the windows out of the dormitories and one thing or another, or go into a dormitory and if they wanted into somebody's room, they just kicked the door in and went in if they had it locked. I don't know whether much of that goes on these days or not, but it was back in those days.
Rather wild.
Well, rather wild when they first get away from home and never been out before, been under mom and dad's thumb. And I think quite a bit of that still goes on today. Especially when I walk down through town early in the morning after a weekend and find all the flower pots dumped over along the sidewalk and things like that. It gets a little disgusting at times.
You know, it seems like every once in a while they slash tires, then they break out windows. Then they go up to the cemetery and knock over the tombstones. And then a few later, it's done again, not necessarily in that order, but it...
That happened once when my dad was running the monument works. And there's a bunch of them went, I can't remember whether it was a Bride of Frankenstein or something else, some movie they had went to, and afterwards they went up and turned over a bunch of stones and messed them up. And in order to keep them kids from going to jail, my dad went down nights and worked on those stones and refinished them. And the fellow that lived with us, he worked there too. He lived down to Weezer, Idaho. And after Dad died, he moved back down there. But he lived with us, boarded room with us, and left his family in Weezer. They didn't want to move up here. So he worked here, and he done the polishing of the stones. Dad done all the chisel work on them, all that type of work, laid out all the patterns for them, and done all the, used air chisels at that time. Now they sandblast them, but he used air chisels and done those, and... Henry Krim lived with us. He set the stones. He'd go out and set all the stones in the cemeteries. So they had quite a territory. That old truck they had, I don't know, it wouldn't run over about 15 miles an hour. How he ever went to Baker and Pendleton and all over with it, I don't know. But it sure didn't run very fast. But, Dad went down and worked nights, and Henry, he went out on his own time, more or less, and reset all those stones then, just to keep those guys from going to jail.
Well, that was a nice thing. Sometimes you wish that they'd catch more of them to do these things. What kind of hobbies did you have?
Never really had too much hobbies, John. I didn't have time for them most of the time.
Well, I know later you started in photography.
I got into that basically when I retired. And I've kind of dropped back on it. I don't know, I kind of lost interest in it. I can't remember even when I had the camera out of the bag last time.
Well, you used to belong to the camera club.
I belonged to the camera club for, gosh, about 13, 14 years, I guess. And it was an experience. I didn't learn as much as I would like to have learned. I thought it would be more of a learning experience than it was.
Well, they did have competition between the members,
yeah,
slideshows, and competed with other areas.
And I think that's part of the problem, because I was talking to one of the members here a while back, and she says, I said, well, I've mainly joined for a learning experience, and I said, I never did learn too much. Most time I'd ask somebody to help me. Well, yeah, they'd help me, but then they never had time. So she says, some of yours, of course, this was basically all slides. And she says, yours was kind of fuzzy. And I says, well, nobody ever told me that. And I says, I couldn't see that there's much wrong with it. Well, yours was kind of fuzzy. Well, see, nobody ever told me. Because I might have been more competition to them if I knew what I was doing.
Well, equipment has a lot to do with it. But I've seen some awful good pictures taken with simple equipment.
Yeah.
Do you remember before World War II when the art center was down at where 10 Depot Street is now?
No, I was never in that. I don't think I ever knew there was one in there.
Well, President Roosevelt had thought that arts was a good thing for people to know about at the time. And I can't remember the photographer that was down there. He became a pretty famous photographer during World War II, a friend of Fred Hill's, and he was administrator of the art center. And a little old lady from Cove taught leather work, and there was a boy from a CC camp up at Starkey Turnoff that came down, and he taught wood chipping, and there was photography in the basement. Mrs. Scala and a number of fellows from the Observer, I know, would come over and do pictures in the basement there. And it was a good place for kids to learn.
I never knew anything about that. I never even knew it was there. You see what a sheltered life I run, John.
Well, you must have been busy at the time.
I don't ever know that I knew anything about that one.
Well, being a little younger than you, I probably had a little more time than on my hands at that time.
Well, I usually kept busy. Like I say, there for a long time, we was working down there in the grocery store. We'd dust shelves and put out merchandise and things for a candy bar or a bottle of pop. You can't do the kids that way anymore. But
Mrs. Berger was a real nice lady.
It was an education. And she liked kids. Halloween came along, she'd spend a week before Halloween sacking up little sacks of penny candy and stuff and sticking some things together and set a deal up by the front door of the store there and sat there all evening long handing out these sacks to the kids as they came by. She liked kids, didn't have any of her own, so she took them all in. Almost every one of us kids that called the Berger Gang at one time or another worked there in the store, and as we got older, well, we got more than a bottle of pop and a candy bar. She paid us for the things we done. And I got to thinking back here the other day, and I'm the only one left of the old original Berger Gang.
I remember Keith Rowe.
Yeah, Keith Rowe, he's gone. Don Caldwell's gone.
Yeah.
Ted Heggie.
In those early days, did you ever go down to the Elks at Christmas and get a bag of candy when they were?
I don't think I ever did.
Well, I know the Elks Club gave out candy there, and we've got pictures down of kids lined up for a block.
Yeah.
During those hard times before World War II.
And the toughest things was, of course, my dad, he made good money there at the Monument Works, but after he died, well, we didn't have much of anything. We had a place that had belonged to my granddad, that where I was born, out on the Oregon side of the Snake River from Weezer, 26 acres there, and we sold it after my dad died, a couple of years, 3 years after dad died. Mom sold that and got, I think, $1,500 or something or other out of it. And we bought a house and paid $1,100 for it.
Well, houses were fairly cheap in La Grande before World War II.
Well, as I understood it, I may be wrong about this, and I don't know whether I should be quoted on it or not, but I understood that the house that Lot Snodgrass lived in up there, that he only paid $2,500 for that one. And I know we only paid $1,100 for that one, and the one that I wanted my mother to buy was on up on the other side of the tracks up on Cedar Street, and there was two houses there. There was a little house in behind it, and we could have bought that for $1,500, and she wouldn't do it. She wanted to stay on this side of the tracks.
Well, I can appreciate it. I think the house, when we lived at 2116, first sold for $2,100.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of money in those days.
Yes, it was.
People weren't making a lot.
Well, I had opportunities, and I never done it. I kicked myself ever since then. But when I was working there at the Modern Laundry, and along a little later than that, when I was working at the cleaning plant, I had several people tell me, "Well, Gene, I'm leaving, and I can't sell my house. Why don't you take it, buy it from me, take it, and just start making me payments on it. You can rent it." And I only want $2,500 for it.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have really money to make the down payment, and then I thought, well, if I can't keep it rented, how do I make the payments on it?
True.
So I wouldn't buy the things. And I had several offers like that. I could have probably bought myself a dozen houses around town, and I could be sitting on Easy Street now if I wasn't such a coward.
Well, a lot of people had to leave during the war and went down to the shipyards and other going into the service and things. But does it seem to you that a lot of people have come back to La Grande that left at one time? And
some of them come back. And I had a lot of them. As soon as they'd get ready to retire, they'd put their house up for sale and say, "I'm moving. I'm going to move to the coast." Or somebody, their husband would die, and she'd say, "Well, I'm going to sell the house and I'm going to move." I'd say, "Don't do that. Wait a year." And I know of a couple of railroaders that sold out, moved to the coast when they retired, and then come back. He said, "I wished I had my old house back." And I tried to say, "Well, don't do things like that. Rent your house if you want to or something. Go down there and rent you an apartment or something and live there for a year and go through all the seasons and see if it's what you want and what you like." And I don't know how many widow women I've told over the years, don't sell out or do anything for at least a year. But the minute their husband died, "Well, I'm going to leave and I'm going to go live with my kids, or I'm going to go here or go there." And most of them have regretted it. They wish they'd stayed and still had their old home back. And I think people would just slow down and wait a year before they make a big decision like that. They'd be a lot better off.
Did it seem to you that the days when it was really tough, that people helped one another?
Yeah. I think more so.
Yeah.
Of course, we used to when Dad was alive and stuff, we used to go visit people a lot. We went out, we had friends all over this valley, over to Cove and all out through the valley, up the Grand Round River. We used to spend a lot of time up the old Hall place.
Well, people didn't have a lot of money and their friends were their entertainment.
That's right. Now you got television and all this stuff and people don't visit anymore. I go for, I don't know when the last time was I had company in this house other than somebody come from out of town to visit me. Nobody ever comes by to see me. I go by and see a few people, but I made myself a promise when I retired that I wouldn't go and drive people nuts and hang a set on their doorstep and stuff, and I went too far the other way. I got so I didn't go see people and do things.
Well, I know you help a couple of ladies I know that have lost their husbands and don't drive, and you take them to buy groceries and things, and I think that's good.
Well, I try to help people that need it. And of course, like Beverly, I've known her since she was about 4 years old, so. And we've been good friends all that time. She used to play with my sister and spend time at our house, so I've known her ever since she's about 4 years old. I tried to teach her to drive when her husband died. She decided her eyes wasn't good enough, so she got rid of her car. So since then, I hauled her for groceries when she needs me to. And she returns the favor. She calls me up every once in a while and says, I'm putting out a pot of beans. Do you want your name in the pot?
Well, that's a nice thing.
Yeah. I've got a lot of good friends, but like I say, nobody seems to come and visit. I go see them once in a while, but there doesn't too many people drop by here.
Well, television is the worst thing that ever happened, in a way.
Yes, it is. And you go see somebody, and their television's on. They don't turn it off. They sit right there with it on. I've got two or three people that I stop by and see, and if they're sitting there watching television, well, they still keep glued to the television. And after an hour, maybe half an hour to an hour, maybe I'll say, well, I've got to go and get up and leave because I'm really not interested in what they're watching, and I'd rather visit with them than just sit there and be entertained by their television. I can be entertained by my own.
Well, did you ever hunt or fish?
I never was into hunting, John. I just didn't care for it. My dad was an avid hunter, but I really didn't care for hunting. And like I say, Dad dying when I was 11. Uh-huh. If he had lived, I'd probably been into hunting and a lot more things. I used to do some fishing, but...
You ever swim down at High Banks?
Used to swim at High Banks. Used to swim up to Perry.
Yeah. And, that was the place all the kids used to go for swimming.
And then the old Crystal Plunge down here under the viaduct.
That was the Talls.
And then the old Crystal Plunge here, and then the old Pine Cone. Up there.
It was awful cold. The water was right out of the river.
Yeah. And once in a while, I'd get to go over to Cove and go in that pool. Even went over one time. Jerry Hendrickson was raised in the same neighborhood I was down there when I lived out on Spruce and Y. He got killed in service. Him and I run together quite a bit when we was kids. We rode bicycles and went to Cove one time, just to go over there and see a friend of his that was working in the hay fields over there, and then we went on and went swimming.
Yeah. Wasn't too bad coming down off the hill because it was downhill for quite a long while and you could coast.
Coming back up. We lost some really talented people during the war. Jerry was really talented. He was just loved woodworking and stuff like that, and he was really talented. Bud McClure was another one. But he didn't even get out of the States before he got hit, killed. He was working as a photographer or something. That was C.H. McClure's son. And I was raised around him and knew him all the time. Him and I got to be good friends. He went into the service, and he was a photographer, and they was hedge hopping someplace down in Florida. They hedged when they should have hopped or something, because they piled up the plane and Bud got killed down there, and he never got out of the States, but he was an aerial photographer.
Those things happen and continue to happen.
Yeah. About to run out of time, are we?
I don't know where we are.
You don't know where we're at. I don't know where I'm at most of the time, John.
Well, I think La Grande is a fantastic place. I guess you do too, because you've been here all this time.
Yeah, I've had opportunities to leave. I've had a couple of jobs offered to me. I could have went for work for Mabel Walters after she left here and went up to Tacoma. Opened a cleaning plant up there. They tried to get me to come up there, and I didn't do it. And I had some job offers over to Pendleton that I could have taken. I went and checked out a few jobs here and there, and I thought, what do I want to leave for? I like it where I'm at.
Well, we all make a certain amount of mistakes in our life, just as long as we can live with the mistakes that we made.
Well, I wish my kids was closer than they are. My son back in Lincoln, Nebraska, and my daughter lives back close to Chicago now. She lives in St. Charles, Illinois, which is about an hour north and west of Chicago. I haven't been back there yet. I need to go back. I've made one trip back to Nebraska about 3 years ago. I went back and went over Memorial Day weekend, and my son had the whole week off. So we took off and went up South Dakota. Went to Mount Rushmore and Crazy Horse and Deadwood and all around different places like that, and over and went through that Waldrug. I don't know whether you've ever been to Waldrug or not.
No,
have you heard about it?
No.
Well, they've advertised that quite extensively. You're used to. And I'd heard about the Waldrug, so I says, well, can we go by the Waldrug? Well, I've never seen such a layout in my life. It's kind of like this big old wooden building and stuff around, and it's kind of like a flea market in there. There's little booths all over with all kinds of stuff in it. But it started out as supposed to have been a drugstore. And they called it the Waldrug. And I think I don't know whether that's the name of the town where it's at or not, but they called it the Waldrug store, and it's just more or less like a flea market in there. There's little booths and different things, and it must be a good square city block. Things like that.
Well, the nice thing about traveling is you come back to La Grande and you see Mount Emily and you know you're coming home.
Well, I have been more places, seen more country since I retired. Some even before I retired, because my kids left home before that.
Yeah.
And I'd go where my kids is at, and I have been to El Paso, Texas, on down into Mexico and around from there. My son, from the time he left home, he either moved to Texas, he moved back to Portland, they moved to Las Vegas, and over to the Phoenix area. Lived in Gilbert before he went to Lincoln, Nebraska. My daughter left home. Well, I guess the first trip after she left home was, and then she moved back here, which I went up to her graduation in Spokane when she graduated from Kinman Business College up there. She didn't like college, so she decided to go to business college. She took a freshman year here, and she didn't like college, so she went to Kinman Business College. And she's lived in Phoenix, Portland, Modesto, California, Minneapolis, Minnesota, back to Danville, California.
Boy.
Then on down into Southern California, living back in what was called Dove Canyon, which is part of Rancho Santa Margarita, which is between Los Angeles and San Diego. And now she's back in Illinois, and I haven't got back there yet. She's been back there about 3 years.
Did you notice when you grew up, well, of course, times were tough. Families didn't have any money. I only remember taking one vacation all the time I was growing up.
I don't think, John, that I ever had a vacation. My vacation when I was a kid was a roundup. I had relatives over at Pendleton, and I had a cousin who was on the city police force over there. And I would lay out of school, and my mother and my sister and I would go over and stay with my aunt or my cousins, one or the other, and go to the roundup, and we could use his family pass because he was on the police force and he had a family pass, and any of the family could use it, and we was family, so we got to go over, and that was my vacation. If we had to go and pay for it, we wouldn't have. And had to pay for a motel, or at that time, I don't think there was even much of a motel. It was all hotels. And if we had had to pay for all that, we couldn't have done it. We'd scrape up enough money to ride the bus over and stay at my relatives over there and go to the roundup every year. And that was the vacation. And that was about the only vacation I had, was going over to my aunt's in the summertime and what have you. And I usually had to work, and I even... Oh, before I was quite old enough too, I worked in the peat cannery in the summertime over there.
There were quite a few kids went over there and worked during that time,
yeah.
And then come back to LeGrand, go to school.
Worked at the old Smith cannery there in Pendleton.
What do you remember about when the cadets were here during the war?
All I can basically remember is them being in the Sack Hotel, and some of them was up in the dormitories at the college.
Yeah.
I was...